Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, here in the bunker beneath the rich soil of north central Indiana on a beautiful day here on Thursday. That's right. May the 22nd, 2014. And we're ready to go, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana. That's where you send your donations for the show and any other donations you'd like to send. Also, that's where you send your snail mail. Yeah, that's right. And then go to our big website, our giant website. It's resist.com. We get thousands of contacts on there every few days. It's a very active and very popular website. We don't have chat boards because chat boards cause more problems than they're worth. Plus, if you go on there as a guest on these chat boards, you think that you're safe. No, you're not, because I have proven just in the last week or so that these boards are not safe if you want any kind of privacy. Well, I see the boys in Washington are about ready to pass that defense bill, which is really a war bill, not defense. Nobody's attacked us lately. In fact, very little at all, ever. But yet, they're spending billions and trillions of dollars on what they call defense, which is nothing but war-making and spreading the will of the corporations around and occupying countries. And that's all it is. Now, it's really amazing to me that the Republicans always crying about too big a government, spend too much money, on and on about that. And they're always voting against any bill that might give a little break to the little man. But you never hear them say, we got to scale back on the military-industrial budget. Do you know any of them that say that? Never hear that. So you know they're liars and they're phonies, because they will not go against these bloated budgets for weaponry and so forth. War to finance even a bigger war machine. We want to thank all our opposition for keeping race at the top of the list of internet news. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. You go on there and bring up your list of stories from around the country on any particular subject. And on racism, it goes on, you know, 30, 40 at a time. Every little thing in the world is called racism now. So we thank our opposition for doing our work for us, really. You know, every time I go into a fast food place, which is not very often, but now and then, they've got a senior ice cream cone and Burger King for a buck. And I stop by there now and then, get an ice cream cone. But I always talk to the people at the counter about they're not being paid enough. They're living on $7 or $8 an hour, and you can't do that. And I tell them, you know, over in Switzerland, they're getting $18 an hour. And they were almost got 25. And this company's cheating you. And so whenever I go into a place like that, and I spread the word and give them my business card and like that. And yesterday up in Chicago, the employee 3,000 McDonald's employees demonstrated. 130 of them got arrested for, you know, a nonsense deal like you stepped over this line and like that. They had all the shock troops, the KGB out there, the Cheka in their Mickey Mouse cover my face uniforms with machine guns and everything else. And you got to understand, we have to support these working class uprisings. Now, you know as well as I do, they're never going to adhere to what these people are demonstrating about. They were having their shareholders meeting today. Now, you've got to remember, you know, we always blame the CEOs, but it's the shareholders, actually, that called the that really call the shots. And so you can't forget those shareholders, especially the big chunk shareholders, that their profit is the main thing above everything, you know. And, of course, we're not against reasonable profit. I'd be the last person against reasonable profit, but their profits are obscene. They're absolutely obscene. And I want you to remember, because sooner or later, these labor uprisings will turn violent as people go farther and farther down the tube. And at that point, while all these other people are wrestling in the gutter with the cops, it's your time to make a run on the shareholders of the corporation, if you get my drift. So anyhow, I'm going to play a little bit of this excerpt I got from Rogue Progressive. Now, on Rogue Progressive stuff, as far as race is concerned, we don't listen to him about that. And some social issues, we don't get too much. He's always into this homosexual thing and wonderful and all that kind of stuff. And we got to save the Indians, you know, the Mongols, even though they've got gambling casinos all over the country. And if they don't have any money, it's their fault because they're taking the money in. If the Jews are taking it out the back door, that's their problem. So a lot of these guys I'm using clips on are certainly not in our camp on race, but they do quite a bit of research. And why not use their research? Yeah. And when they say the right stuff, give them credit for it. You know, instead of this thing, right, left, Republican, Democrat type thing, if you're either on one side or the other, that's the problem with this country. Anyhow, let's listen to this.
The McDonald's arrests. Some of those arrested today in Oak Brook, Illinois, were uniform-wearing McDonald's employees who had come for the protest from 33 different U.S. cities. Also arrested was Mary Kay Henry, president of the Service Employees International Union. That union is the financial and logistical backer for Fast Food Forward, the group organizing the protests. Now, what they were demanding is $15 per hour pay and the right for fast food workers to try to unionize without retaliation. I mean, when you stop and think that in this country, in this time, people can work their asses off a 40-hour work week and not be able to take care of their family. To the extent that even the employer knows it. What was it, Kathy? McDonald's published a list of ways that their employees could get help. Food stamps and Medicaid and how to apply for this stuff.
Getting a second job.
Second job. Sleeping at your friend's house.
Moving into some place where the rent was cheaper. They suggested, I love this, because when you think about some major city where a McDonald's might be located, they suggested a budget. They had a sample budget up on their website, and they allocated, I think, $600 a month for rent or housing expenses.
Yeah,
I have no idea where that is unless it's a college dorm that's partially subsidized or something, or you know, a hostel somewhere. And I think they had nothing budgeted for gas. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. And food was like $200 a month. And, of course, you're supposed to break your food up into little pieces so it appears you have more food than you really do.
Yeah, this is what comes from the gorilla in the $200 billion fast food industry. In a perfect world, this company wouldn't exist. Not only have they destroyed dietary habits in this country, but they spread all over the world. You know, I make the analogy of capitalism to cancer, and if ever there was a truer example of that is McDonald's. But Kendall Fells, who's a leader of Fast Food Forward, said, quote, workers are taking on the biggest, baddest, richest in the $200 billion fast food industry. If we can bring McDonald's to the table, the road ahead will be a lot easier. The Reverend Dr. William Barber II, head of the NAACP's North Carolina chapter, led the march into the McDonald's campus in Oak Brook. He said, quote, we can't treat corporations like people and people like things. We can't treat corporations like people and treat people like things. He went on to say, a living wage is a moral mandate, and it's time for McDonald's to pay fast food workers their just due now. Jesus, God. So 2,000 people showed up. McDonald's officials said the crowd was 600. The Oak Brook police estimated the crowd at 1,500. They arrived in 32 buses. McDonald's, in probably one of the smarmiest, condescending, patronizing statements from a corporation in recent memory, said a spokesman for McDonald's said the following, after saying they have no plans to make any changes for tomorrow morning's annual meeting, they said this, somebody said this, quote, Heidi Barker Saw Shechem, that's her name, don't ask, I don't know. She was McDonald's spokeswoman. She said, quote, folks have a right to protest peacefully and express their views. We're gearing up for our annual business meeting tomorrow and welcoming our shareholders to campus. Folks have a right to protest peacefully and express their views. You bastard. I mean, what a condescending statement. I mean, who in the hell are you, Heidi Barker? How much do you make? Do you work for $7.25 an hour as a spokes thug for McDonald's? Is that what you make? Or are you more up around the three or the six-figure income? Folks have a right to protest peacefully. You know what, Heidi, and the rest of you capitalist swine? That's true today. In a manner of speaking, because folks don't have a right to protest peacefully. Oh, it's on the books. The books being the U.S. Constitution. But it's on the books for the USA Patriot Act revised that right is gone now. And if people who, what's the quote? If people who are not allowed to protest peacefully will change the system violently. I don't get these people. I don't get these people. I don't know what they're trying to do, these corporations. It appears that they're trying to kill everybody in the country. I don't care if we talked about Monsanto last night. We talked about Dow Chemical. I'm lost. How about you, Truth Seeker? Are you lost? Can you make sense out of this? People have a right to protest peacefully. Gee, thanks, Heidi. I'm sure the 2,000 people who gathered out there, I'm sure the workers, the single parents, because a lot of people who are single moms or single dads with a kid or two, that they put in a public school and then have a church bus show up after school to take the kids to aftercare and some church basement while they can continue to sell the swill for their $7.25 an hour, and yet they can't make the rent payment, they can't afford a car, they can't afford to feed their children healthy food. God damn these people that say you have a right to protest peacefully. Man. I don't know. It's two topics in a row that has just got inside my gut. And gotten me very upset here on church night. Church night, right? Let's gather at the river and pray, huh? All right. It is church night, so I...
Well, let's be logical about this. What good is it to demonstrate when all demonstrations really come to naught? Unless they do break out into violence. I mean, when every demonstration is met with this glib kind of thing, well, you have a right to demonstrate peacefully. Well, demonstrating peacefully never won anything. Not really. So nature gives you the option and the ability to demonstrate violently. Because otherwise, if there's no teeth in it, nothing will ever change. They don't care. That's what I keep telling the racial people and the right wing and the so-called Hollywood Nazis. They don't care how much you walk around the block with your flags and stuff. They don't care nothing about that. It's only power. They have the power. You have no power. And either you figure a way of getting the power, or you might as well just stay home. Because they will never give up the power willingly. Once power is assembled, nothing will change it. Nothing will take it away other than direct action. I mean, if you know of another way, you know, you try voting, you try leafleting, you try getting on TV or radio, which is almost impossible. You try all this kind of stuff. And what changes? No, in fact, it gets worse because they use the very fact that you are demonstrating to show how weak you are, that you have no power. So they would like you on a small scale, especially the racial nationalists or the racists or whatever. They want you to go out in the street now and then with a few people so they can use even that against you. But see, they should say, well, we're glad they're marching around peacefully and not cutting our throats. But they don't do that. They don't say that. They just make fun of people. Well, they made fun of a lot of people down through history, and they learned to regret it. And hopefully they're going to learn to regret it in this country, because we all know that the empire is beginning to deteriorate. We've got troops in 124 countries. How can you imagine? We got billions of dollars in armaments, new armaments, sitting over there in Afghanistan that they say are going to cost too much to bring back. We've got the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians making a deal, the Shanghai Agreement, to where they're going to move away from the dollar. And once these power blocks start moving away from the dollar, well, why do you think Muammar Gaddafi was executed? Muammar Gaddafi was going to go on a gold standard over there on the type of gold coin or whatever. I forget what they called it. That's why they killed Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, murdered him. I mean, they talk about Benghazi. Well, wait a minute. The head of the country, the legal head of the country, of which you notice towards the last of his career, United States was trying to soft soap him and everything. Whenever this government tries to, if you're a strong man and they start soft soaping you and being nice to you, watch out. They're going to kill you. Yeah. So anyhow, this this Shanghai agreement between those three and others that are going to jump on board can very well be the end of the dollar. And it could happen very fast because of the insane practices of this government. It can't be by accident. It can't be by accident that this country's going down the tube. I mean, nobody with a reasonable education would not be able to figure that out. There's a hidden hand here that wants to destroy and has set out to destroy the United States and along with it the white race, or at least the white race's ability to lead anything. Yeah, and they've been destroying this country for years, directly destroying it. Anything that made it weaker or screwed it up, integration, you name it, shipped the jobs out of the country, all that kind of stuff. It's all planned. So, but the boobs keep playing the game. They keep going to Las Vegas. They keep going to one gambling casino. They lose money there. They go across the street and say, oh, it's got to be better over here. And they lose their money there. So at the polls, they go Democrat one time and go Republican the next time. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. And they say, but you can demonstrate peacefully as long as you don't go over the line, as long as you don't bump one of these Cheka cops, SWAT cops they've got standing around. As long as you don't touch them or bloody their nose or anything like that, you're okay. You know, we like to be able to tell the world this is democracy, see? We allow these people to demonstrate. We allow you to demonstrate. That makes them look good. We got a democracy here. You get to say what you want to say. It just doesn't change a goddamn thing. Do you understand? It doesn't change a goddamn thing until those mobs and demonstrators climb up over the ramparts into that boardroom and drag those shareholders out into the street. Until you get to that point, everything else is a waste of time. A waste of time. But that's something you can do. Anytime you happen to, I hope you don't go into a fast food place very too much. But we all probably have once in a while. And not all fast food is horrible either. I mean, you know, but of course, after I see the way they're doing chickens now, unless I can buy chickens off of grass-fed, free-range chickens, I'm not eating any chicken. Man, if you've seen that stuff on the Internet about how they raise the chickens. But anytime you go into one of those places, or maybe just go in there for political reasons, buy the simplest thing you can buy, or get a Coke or a glass of water or something, and express your solidarity with the workers, because a lot of these workers are so dumbed down they don't even know how bad they're being screwed. I know I've talked to a couple of them that looked at me like I was from Mars. Oh, I ain't making enough money? Oh, how'd you figure that out? All right, baby. Storm the Bastille, baby. Let's see a little Frenchy-type action here. And I think we can make quite a bit of agreement with people who are progressives or on the left. I mean, if they don't want to agree on certain points, just say, fuck you. I mean, you know, but if they do, say, look, you got two fists, I got two fists, we got some disagreements, but we got to get this straightened out, and when it's all over, we got to sit down and work this out. Other problems. But for now, hey, occupy the hell out of this country. I can see the old traditional conservative right-wingers, even the racial ones, when they hear me say this stuff. Well, that goddamn Metzger's become a Bolshevik. he's obviously in the pay of the Jews, and he's obviously in the pay of the Morris Days. And, shit, I always knew he was a communist. Well, they go right on supporting the mine owners and people that are oppressing workers all over the country. And the Klan has done that for a long time. When there was a problem between the miners and the coal mine owners, most of the time the Klan sided with the owners, even against a lot of their comrades who picked up a gun and said, fuck the owners, we're going to get our money, you know? Well, they certainly are using racism as a false flag. I mean, in the sense that they're using it. They're running it into the ground, really. I think in the long run it helps us out. Because some people are saying now that, well, maybe I am a little racist. A lot of people are admitting that, you know, like, well, and then I'll confess to my Jesus and get out of this thing. But racism is just overworked. It's like they overworked Nazi. I guess, I don't know what I told you. I watched this movie about, it was right at the end of the war. The Germans were still occupying Poland. And the one guy, one working guy says to the other, he says, they're calling us Nazis now. And the other guy says, yeah, I've only been a National Socialist. I don't know what this Nazi stuff means. And you got to straighten people out on this. Anytime you send out something you've gotten over the internet that says Nazi, put on German. Let's force the ball back into Germany's courtyard, because they're getting off the hook. They're getting off the hook in Germany. If they're going to go on and on for decades and decades forever condemning their own people, well, then change it. You know, it's not a Nazi concentration camp, it's a German concentration camp. It wasn't Nazi leadership, it was a German leadership or National Socialist. Change it around. Whenever you write a letter on the internet or write a letter to the newspaper, tell them. Because the modern Germany is getting off the hook by acting like, oh, it was them, not us. It was the Nazis, not us. And you all know that the majority of people in Germany were 100% behind the National Socialist move. Now, here's a hell of a combination. Greg Palast, who's a muckraking reporter, does a good job fronting off these oil companies and all the damage they've done around the world and in the Gulf of Mexico and so forth. And he has Jesse Ventura on here. I haven't listened to this, so you'll probably be hearing it first on Insurgent Radio. Let's see what they've got to say.
He's uncovered the biggest corruption scandals in the history of modern politics, from Bush's election steal in 2000 to the oil industry's deep pockets of dark money. Today we welcome fellow truth seeker Greg Palast. He's an investigative journalist whose works have appeared frequently on the BBC and The Guardian. His New York Times bestseller, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, was the basis for the 2000 film documentary film, Bush Family Fortunes. His latest investigative film is Vultures and Vote Rustlers, in which he takes on the biggest bankers, oil companies, and other predators sweeping your money and your vote. I welcome Greg Palast to Off the Grid. Greg, are you in any fear for your life with the drones? I got a lot of coverage when I said that I was down here off the grid ducking away from those drones because, you know, now our government and our president can kill you for speaking out against the very government. We're not allowed to do that from a foreign country, or you could be droned. Any worries on that, Greg?
I'm mainly worried for my sources. If you see it in the film, which, by the way, is gregpalace.com, if you can see it, you'll see that I was arrested by the secret police in what I call the Islamic Republic of AP, Azerbaijan. And even Homeland Security, USA, did charge me with violating the Patriot Act for terrorism. I call it investigative reporting. I was filming the Exxon built machine known as a refinery in Louisiana, and they said that was a violation of the Patriot Act. What really scared me, Governor, is that Homeland Security took 2 weeks to find me. And you do have to understand, I'm on international television. I have a giant website.
Wait, Greg, let me back off on that. Let me digest that for a second. So you're on TV or you're out in the public on a daily basis, and when they decided they wanted to charge you or whatever they were going to do to you, it took them 2 weeks to do it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary. And, you know, they said, so this is very serious. And I said, you know, they said September 11th was a very serious thing, and so you have to take these laws seriously. I said, sir, I work in the World Trade Center. I think I do take September 11th seriously. So why don't you go find the guy that did it?
That's a remarkable story. Now, I can speak to the BP oil spill, because when I was doing conspiracy theory, that was one of the shows we did where we went down there. And one of the things I found interesting, I believe China had an oil spill. And China handled their oil spill in a capitalistic manner, where we handled our oil spill in a socialist, communist manner. Let me explain. The people that cleaned up in China were only paid by how much oil they could recover and how quickly they could do it. Our oil spill people were under no terms to do it fast at all. And in fact, when I was down there, I said before I left, well, guys, you know, I wish you the best of luck. I hope you get this done quick. And a couple of them looked at me and said, we don't. Because the longer they worked on it, the longer they had jobs that were paying them an extremely good amount of money. So they were in no hurry to clean up the oil. If it got stretched out from a year to a year and a half, well, that meant they made that much more money in that additional half a year. Did you discover that also?
Yeah, I went down for British television. And what I was finding is that they paid all these guys to do skim work and lay out the emergency boom. Most of those boats were not out, and they were only shoved out when BP had a little show for the American press. British press, I got my own way out there. I arranged to go to, I even arranged to get on a submarine to get inside the water, and not just, but we wouldn't follow the rules of BP. So it was totally a show. Totally show. But one thing you have to recognize, TP, I've been following this company for a long time. And, in fact, I was chief investigator for racketeering charges on the Exxon Valdez breakup, which is actually BP's fault more than anything, because tankers do run aground and oil rigs blow out, Governor. That's just a sad truth of the oil industry. But it doesn't have to climb 600 miles of Gulf coastline when you have a blowout, and it doesn't have to climb 1,000 miles of Alaska coastline. You're supposed to have equipment at the ready. They promised it in Alaska. British Petroleum promised a ship, a containment ship, an emergency vessel, the full-time crew, and all the hoses and rubber skirts and all that crap to surround the ship if it ever went aground and went down. This is BP, not Exxon. It's BP's job. They're the owners. By the way, BP that owns our oil in Alaska, British Petroleum, not American. BP. And BP promised they would contain the ship. Well, the Exxon Valdez hit at the exact point at Bly Island where BP had promised to have all this equipment and full-time emergency crews, and it was a complete, absolute lie. Their crew was like Pirates of the Caribbean. It was ghost crews and ghost ships. There was nothing there. We shouldn't even have heard of the Exxon Valdez because it should have been surrounded immediately by rubber booms, and the spill would have been contained right there on the spot, and whatever oil on the ship would have been taken off right away. But because BP lied, and lied again under oath in documents, and they got away with it, by the way. That's why they did the same game in the Gulf of Mexico. They promised the same stuff. When you look at those pictures, when you look at my film, Vultures of Vote Wrestlers, when you look at the pictures of the oil rig in flames. But you will not see. You'll see a bunch of fireboats around. You know what it means to spritz the water on an oil fire, right? It's a joke. Tragic joke. 11 men were burnt to death. BP had promised you would have emergency containment ships. It's not rocket science. Clean up an oil spill, Governor. You put rubber around it and you suck. Rubber and suck. You just put these rubber skirts around and you suck it out with the steamer ship. Because oil mostly floats to the top. BP promised all that equipment in Alaska wasn't there. They got away with it. They promised it again before they went drilling in the Gulf. And they did it again. It was all fake. None of the equipment that they said was there was there. And by the way, they just promised it for a third time. And 2 weeks ago, our president granted BP another track to drill right next to where the Deepwater Horizon went down. BP's learned its lesson. So I can give our government the finger and get more oil.
But, Greg, what about those jobs?
Well, that's the one thing, you know, jobs are supposed to be created by the oil industry. And I got to say, you'll see in my film the jobs that you get with the oil industry. $14 an hour and no benefits to be picking up with kitty litter, Cooper scoop.
Now that we're on the topic now, give me your impression. What about this Keystone? That's a hot item right now. Everybody's talking about this pipeline. Am I wrong? I've heard that if they run this pipeline, all the oil from it will be shipped to China. Is that false?
A lot of it will go to the Caribbean. None of it will go to the United States. And let me, you know, I've been following pipeline story for a while, but the key characters who are left out of the picture are the brothers Koch, Charles and David. You have to ask yourself, Governor, why the hell are we running a pipeline from Canada across the entire United States to Texas? Texas, I understand, has a little bit of oil. But the reason we're running that pipeline is it terminates at the Koch Industries Corpus Christi refinery. All that oil from Canada is going to the coast. And the reason it's going to the coast and why they need a pipeline from Canada, even though they can see oil wells and those derricks from Texas, from their refinery plant gate, they can't use Texas oil. It's too non-polluting. It's light oil. It's Texas light intermediary. They have to use only heavy oil, and right now they get it from Venezuela, from Hugo Chavez, now the current president, Maduro. And the Venezuelans charge $101 a barrel, whereas the Canadian says that they'll charge only $70 a barrel. The difference, $30 a barrel, will mean $1 billion each of the brothers Koch every year. So that's why they're running a pipeline across America when the oil is right outside the plant gate. The alternative is for the Koch refinery to be changed to use Texas American oil.
Greg, are the Koch brothers in financial trouble? I mean, like Kamau, do they not know where their next bowl of Wheaties is coming from? Why on earth do they need any more money?
Well, you know what every billionaire wants, don't you, Governor? Another billion.
$2 billion.
I know.
And in fact,
sick.
Yeah, now the Koch brothers, well, there are four Koch brothers. I've been tracing all four for about 17 years. In one case, I started out working alongside the FBI 17 years ago on the brothers' coast. They're each worth, the two of the brothers are worth about $30 billion each, Charles and David. But there's also Billy Coke. He's worth about $7, $8 billion, and then Fred Sr., some billions I haven't been able to count up yet. But you want to know why these guys keep doing this stuff, why they want to take the filthiest oil, or it's actually liquid coal from Canada, ignore American oil, we have a glut right now, and burn that crap, and why they need that extra $2 billion a year. The answer came from Charles Koch himself. When I was investigating, this is in my film, by the way, you should get it at www.gregpalace.com. When I was investigating Koch 15 years ago, it was with the FBI. We were looking for the reason why oil was missing from the Osage Indian Reservation in Oklahoma. It turns out Koch Industries had an agreement with Osage Indians to remove their oil from their little tiny stripper well. These people are poor. They live in, you know, mobile homes in the middle of nowhere. And they get a couple bucks royalty, you know, $100 a month royalty from their little well. Koch Industries was supposed to take that oil in tanker trucks and pay them for it. So they would take 90 barrels of oil and mark down that they took 80. They would take 70 barrels of oil and mark down that they took 55. They were skimming. It's called overage. And it added up to over $100 million of royalties owed that were stolen from the Indians and the United States government, by the way. So with the FBI, we traced the truck back to the source. Was this just some renegade guys in Coke's company? No. And who do we find standing on a loading dock telling the truckers to steal more? The guy kept yelling more over it. Was a guy named Charles Coke. So here's a guy who's worth billions of dollars telling his drivers that they better skim another $20 from an Indian family every day. Just give me another $20 out of a poor Indian family's pocket.
You know, Greg, I talked about this earlier on Off the Grid, and I equated it to a disease that I have. I have a disease on golf called ball hawking, where when I go to play golf, I can't stand to leave the course with less golf balls than what I started with. I'm a ball hawker. And I have more golf balls now. I can live four lifetimes and not play enough golf and use them all. But I can't stop myself. I don't know why. And I got to feel this is the same thing that happens to these guys in money, isn't it? So you can equate that to golf ball hawking?
Well, you know, actually we found out why Coke. Coke actually explained why he was taking the money, because he had his one of his vice presidents wired. And one of his vice presidents asked Coke, Charles Coke, why are you doing this? Why are you taking a few bucks from some Indians when you got billions? And Coke's reply, and this is very important, says, Coke said, I want my fair share, and that's all of it. They're money points. They don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah, that's quite a fair share. What do you think of Obama's current chair of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen?
You know, she just joined the gang. But she has a shirt. It's the same crew. It could have been worse. You remember, they were, Obama was trying to shove Larry Summers down our throats. But one of the things I'm glad at least I took his scalp out, because I found a memo that he was having secret meeting, Larry Summers, with the six biggest bankers. It's in the film, called the Endgame Memo, and these are illegal meetings when he is Secretary of the Treasury. So the Treasury Secretary can always meet with bankers, but not in secret and not to go over legislation of the United States government. He had these secret illegal meetings. I followed that story all over the world, but we didn't see it in the U.S. papers, but I will say that Sherrod Brown, Senator from Ohio, picked it up.
Well, wait, Greg, doesn't that fall under national security, so we're not allowed to know?
That's right. I mean, I do work with The Guardian, and as you know, my newspapers, put out the WikiLeaks file from Private Manning. We've got the Snowden file. And you know what? You have to ask yourself, why do reporters like myself, and Glenn Greenwald and others, have to go across the water to another nation to report on our own country? You know, I'm a very mainstream reporter, Jesse, and in the rest of the world, I'm on the nightly news. But in the United States, I'm off the grid.
Tune in tomorrow for my part two interview with Greg Palast.
Well, there you go. One hell of an expose. And if you don't think the corporations have become a dictatorship in this country, and no politician will stand against them. And you've got enough right there to create a revolution. There's enough evidence right there to create a revolution. Anyhow, you can go to GregPalast.com. That's Greg, PALAST.com. And check that movie out. I'm going to check it out. Well, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban may own a team of mostly Negro men, but outside his position as an NBA owner, he admits to being biased or bigoted where black men wearing hoodies are concerned. During a GrowCo conference on Wednesday, Cuban admitted that he's sometimes racist and even went so far as to give examples. Quote, I know I'm prejudiced, and I know I'm bigoted in a lot of different ways, Cuban said. Quote, if I see a black kid in a hoodie on my side of the street, I'll move to the other side of the street. If I see a white guy with a shaved head and tattoos on the side he is on, I'll move back to the other side of the street. None of us have pure thoughts. We all live in glass houses. How about that? But I'll bet he'd move across the street faster for a black guy in a hoodie than he would a guy with a tattoo and a bald head. Cuban was trying to make a point that everyone has a bias, and no one is immune from making decisions based upon stereotypes. While it's life-saving, if you see a lion coming down the path and you're a damn rabbit, you better get off that path and hide. You don't need to wait till the damn lion gets right on top of you. You recognize the lion's going to eat you. Quote, "You don't. There's no law against stupid." Well, Cuban said, "It's not stupid to discriminate." Quote, "I'm one guy who says don't force the stupid people to be quiet. I want to know who the morons are." Well, I guess you're one of the morons because you went along with it. Cuban's comments stirred controversy. Among the first to come to his defense was sports commentator Stephen A. Smith, who went on the air to defend Cuban. This is curious, considering that in 2012, Cuban spent the first half of an interview on ESPN's First Take trashing co-host Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. Dr. Boyce Watkins, who often speaks on racial issues in the United States, says that Cuban's comments probably have an agenda. See, this method of shutting people off and shutting them up by calling them racist or even exposing them as racist or that they discriminate is gradually wearing off. It's gradually wearing off. People are getting... A lot of people out there that don't say much are sick and tired of it. Research reported by the Pew Research and New York Times is showing that nearly 1.2 million Americans who identified themselves as Hispanic, Latino, or of Spanish origin on the 2000 census have now changed their race identification to white on the 2010 census. The astonishing revelation was presented at an annual meeting of the Population Association of America. This is an interesting finding since mainstream media reveres the Hispanic demographic as a growing minority. While Hispanics were not the only group to answer racial identification categories differently between the 2000 and 2010, they do represent the largest shift. Hispanics also represent the country's fastest growing ethnic group by total number. Well, you see, a lot of these white, true Hispanics among the Mexican population have not stood up and said anything. Of course, most of your wealthy Mexican, light-skinned Mexicans, will prefer to be included as white. But also it works down. I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of Spanish-style white people that come from Mexico. That's going to diminish their numbers or their influence quite a bit. Researchers believe that this shift is due largely to the fact that race is not considered an immutable characteristic for Hispanics like it is for those who as white, black, and Asian American. Well, that's bullshit. The term Hispanic does not actually denote a race. Well, absolutely. It should be white people from the Iberian Peninsula, Spanish speaking. I've always said that because when you go to Spain, depends on where you're at, but I mean, there's probably more Aryan or white Spaniards in Madrid than there are in Chicago. I mean, of whites, period. The term Hispanic does not actually denote a race. Okay, census forms inquire about race and ethnicity by asking two questions. One about whether the person is of Hispanic or Latino origin. The other about racial identification. Well, I know that my lady worked for the census-taking people back in 2000, 2010 or 2000, I forget which. But anyhow, she was told directly that you have to put down whatever race they tell you. You could be black as the ace of spades, and if they say, oh, Oz White, well, you got to put it down. So that sort of screws up the numbers here. But I can see this working somewhat in our favor also, because of a true white Hispanic will find a home with our race, of course, like to anybody else from South America or Mexico or any place like that. If they're white, they're white, you know. But thus far, they've been included in the non-white, which sort of gives a false impression and gives false indications in these studies. I've known a lot of white Hispanics, who, if you called them a Mexican or a mestizo, they'd punch you in the mouth. Numbers show that 37% of those who identified ethnically as Hispanic or Latino chose to identify their racial identity as some other race. In addition, the researchers found that about 7% of those who identified as Hispanic changed their racial identification from some other race in the 2000 census to white on the 2010 census. These new findings suggest that the Hispanics may be assimilating in a way similar to the Italian and Irish immigrants. An interesting component of this aspect is while many have long believed that America will become a minority-majority country, with whites becoming the minority, Hispanics choosing to identify as white may mean that this tipping point either does not come as quickly or does not come at all. Another interesting outcome of this assimilation is that research shows that those Hispanics who identify as white have higher levels of education and income. The intersection of race in America is always a winding one, and it will be interesting to see how the racial identification of Hispanics continues to evolve over time. See, this is what I was giving the right wing hell 20, 30 years ago. I said, you're ignoring whites in South Mexico, Central America, and South America. You've got to embrace those people because if they're white, they're white. But the right wing has had this same attitude as Washington has had in discriminating against people from South America and Mexico. But this is the problem of being in bed with the right wing and the Republicans. That's the way they come across. And it's retarded our progress as far as a viable racial group and struggle. If we just started on that a long time ago, we'd be in the forefront there. So anyhow, that's the story. I don't care where you come from. If you're white, you're white. And of course, there's various degrees of white, but there is a point beyond which you can't go, and there's a point which you can go. Most of the discrimination has been because they speak Spanish. And, you know, a hell of a large percentage of the white nationalists don't understand that Spanish is a white man's language. It's not a Indian language, Mongol language, mestizo language. It's technically a white man's language, and there's nothing wrong with it. But the right wing has tended to discriminate because of language rather than actual race. Well, here's an interesting bombshell. Investigators' bombshell revelation, O.J. Simpson's son was the real killer. O.J. Simpson has always maintained his innocence, even going so far as to commit himself to finding the real killers of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. A private investigator now says he's found the real killer. And although the assailant shares the same last name as the convicted killer, it's not O.J. In a book entitled O.J. Simpson is Innocent and I Can Prove It, William C. Deere lays out evidence which suggests that O.J. Simpson's son, Jason Simpson, committed the murders as part of a rage killing. Deere reached this conclusion after 18 years of exhaustive research, which included interviewing witnesses and suspects, creating a timeline, and upending erroneous presumptions made by the LAPD. Deere concluded that although O.J. Simpson visited the crime scene, he did not commit the murder. Although most people tend to think the Simpson affair is old news, Deere presents strong evidence to support his premise, given the evidence Deere has uncovered. It is odd that Jason Simpson was never considered a suspect by the LAPD. Among the strongest evidence collected by Deere were prescription pill bottles, which show Jason was being treated for rage disorder, along with police reports describing Jason's abuse of alcohol and arrest for assault with a deadly weapon. Deere also went through Jason's trash and found numerous liquor and prescription pill bottles, according to the book, and a note where Jason seems to refer to himself as Jekyll and Hyde. As if it weren't enough, Deere also obtained evidence showing that Jason went to the hospital and reported hearing voices, almost killed his girlfriend during a fit of rage, and often wore knit caps like the one found at the crime scene. Jason had no alibi for where he was during the time of the killings. His time card for where he worked was handwritten, even though the electronic machine was working. And according to Deere, the African-American hair found in the Navy hat at the crime scene did not match that of O.J. Simpson. Also, while attending the Army-Navy Academy, Jason was trained in hand-to-hand combat as well as field knife training. This is only some of the evidence that Deere outlines in his bombshell book. Before you write Deere off as some nut out to make a quick buck, consider that he once solved the murder of an Ohio man under similar circumstances. Well, I know most of you would say, oh, well, he's a nigger, you know, so what? You know, but I don't, that's not the kind of guy I am. I believe in justice. And if a man is innocent of a horrible crime, he shouldn't be spending the rest of his life in prison. I don't care who he is or what color he is. But to ever get this back into court with that corrupt bunch of criminals out there in L.A. court buildings and all those people, all those attorneys are corrupt to the hilt, is probably never going to happen no matter how much evidence this private detective's got. Well, our last story to close out the show is how much the Republicans and Democrats, but mostly Republicans, how much do they care about the veterans? How much do they really care about the veterans? Let's listen to some statistics on how they cut the funding for veterans.
Before the hour, so let's get right to the reality of these Republican swine who, if they had any character or any moral center, they would not say a word about this VA situation, because where it comes to the money, they're responsible for the shortfalls. Let's go back to 1999. In spite of warnings from the VA that their hospitals were in crisis, Republicans, who controlled Congress at the time, blocked a bill to increase VA health care funding. In 2003, Bush administration budget cuts forced 200,000 to wait 6 months for health care. Also in 2003, Bush cuts $2 billion in veterans' health care. This is right at the time when this draft-dodging son of a bitch and the monster who controlled him ordered Americans into two combat zones. 2003, Bush also cut $1.5 billion of veterans funding. 2004, George Bush cuts $2 billion. More. These are in addition to each other. They're not cumulative. 2007, Bush vetoes H.R. 1591 that would have increased VA health care spending. 2010, Republicans filibuster a bill that would have provided benefits for homeless veterans. 2011, Republicans filibuster jobs bill that would have provided incentives for businesses to hire returning veterans. 2011, Republican Michelle Bachmann proposes cutting $4.5 billion from the VA, including capping health care benefits and cutting disability payments. 2012, Republicans block a bill that would have helped create jobs for returning Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. Also in 2012, Republicans block a bill that would have provided job training for returning war veterans. Also in 2012, Republicans filibuster a bill that would have adjusted VA benefits to keep up with inflation. Also in 2012, Republicans block seven other bills that would have helped veterans and the VA. H.R. 466, 1168, 1171, 1172, 1293, 1803, and 2352. Those are the identifying numbers on these House bills. 2013, Paul Ryan's budget cuts $6 billion more from veterans' benefits. And this year, 2014, led by Mitch McConnell, Republicans filibuster a bill that would have boosted funding for the VA by $21 billion, expanded benefits, and repealed cuts pushed through under the Ryan budget deal. So when you hear of these filthy, stinking Republicans, as you will tomorrow, you'll hear them on television being interviewed by the swine that give them airtime. You'll hear it from these right-wing bastards who control talk radio. You're going to hear it, that somehow this is Obama's fault. I'm not negating any responsibility Barack Obama has. But over the past 15 years and more, these filthy Republicans have blocked every single attempt to provide more money to take care of the people who volunteered to go defend America, America was never in any danger. From Iraq? I'll tell you who America was in danger from. The people that led the country under the Bush crime family. The people that led the country under Bush 1. The people that led the country under Reagan. That's who got America into the situation that we find ourselves in now. Oh, and by the way, since it's church night, the Afghanistan situation and the 9-1-1 thing goes back to what Osama bin Laden said. I'm paraphrasing. But he said that the American military had to get their pagan asses out of Saudi Arabia, the country that controls the two holiest sites in all of Islam, Mecca and Medina. And he warned that if the American military did not get out, there was going to be hell to pay. We didn't get out. There was hell to pay. And shortly after the attack of September 11, 2001, George W. Bush quietly ordered U.S. military bases closed and removed from Saudi Arabia. Oh, but let's talk about Benghazi. And the last time, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, this hour, and I'm going to mention again next hour, is being sponsored by, thank you, Jay, and I'll repeat this a couple more times. I'm sorry, Jason, I just got caught up in this, anytime it's an issue about veterans, and I am not one, it just drives me to the wall. Because in the first place, for the past 50 years, any action, military action taken by the United States has been without provocation. It has been a military action of opportunity for the capitalists and the warmongers who run this country. And then when the men mostly and the women now return from these combat deployments, they're treated like they are invisible. But you will hear punks like Sean Hannity and pigs like Rush Limbaugh dragging up stories of Vietnam veterans returning at their point of entry back to the U.S. being spit on by the hippies. They love that story. But for the past 50 years, these rotten sons of bitches have done nothing, not anything, for the people who go fight for capitalist America. They're not fighting for you and me. They're not fighting to keep this country safe. Every one of these military adventures has made us less safe. You know that. I know that. Anybody who can think knows that. But aside from that, The Republicans are always so eager, so willing to commit people into theater zones of combat and war and destruction. But when it's time to bring those people home, the Republicans and a good number of Democrats turn their goddamn backs and walk away. Which raises the question of why we're doing this at this point in this nation's history, in the history of the species, we're still doing this? We're still waging war on each other while the goddamn planet is burning? We're waging war on each other while we desperately need resources to go into medical research and geophysical research and exploration. The largest piece of veterans legislation in decades, this is back in February, aimed at expanding health care, education, and other benefits, was rejected when the Senate could not get the 60 votes necessary to overcome the Republican filibuster. The Republican filibuster, goddammit, they're the ones who do this. The legislation that would have helped these veterans died on a vote of 56 to 41. Only two Republicans voted for the veterans. Two! Said it was too much money, too costly. Now, it was Bernie Sanders who authored the bill. He said at the time that the provisions in the bill have won bipartisan support in other pieces of pending legislation before Congress. But the Republicans complained about how they're going to pay for it. You rotten bastards, before you authorize the money to go to war, why don't you set aside double that amount for when the people start coming home, committing suicide, and on the verge of insanity? Sanders' legislation had more than 140 provisions costing $21 billion over 10 years. That's $2.1 billion a year, by the way. Most of that money was to come from billions of dollars the government projected it would be allowed to spend on wars overseas in the fight against Al-Qaeda. But Republicans argued that this is, their word, phony budgeting. Because the U.S. participation in the Iraq War is over and operations in Afghanistan are winding down. At the same time, these right-wing sons of bitches are climbing all up Barack Obama's ass talking about, oh, you're going to cut and run out of Afghanistan. These people are insane. Why are they in positions of power in the United States government? Why? You know why? Because we allow it. That's why. We'll be back in a minute.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better myself. That's the name of the game. For the most part, the highest percentage of people wanting to get us into occupying other countries are in the Republican Party. And then they turn right around, and after they get us in there and get all our these guys maimed and crippled, they don't want to pay for their keep. They don't want to pay for their medical supplies and so forth. I mean, how anybody could vote for these bastards is beyond me. Totally beyond me. I mean, you could bring up all kinds of shit from the Democrat Party, and there's plenty of it, and some of those Democrats go along with this type of thing. Stopping the funding. But many of the silly things the Democrats do don't come anywhere near what it's costing through the Republicans. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker. In the meantime, I hope I haven't ruined your whole day. Oh, maybe if I offended you a little bit, that might work out. If the truth of my statements are correct. Okay. 14:05, and as we always say, keep your mouth shut. Your eyes open, your ears open, baby.
put his street clothes on but couldn't find his shoes. The night before he tied one on, now cobwebs filled his head. By afternoon he called in sick and then went back to bed. The next day he felt shaky but he made it off to work and voted to increase his pay and take another perk. Although the people cried out loud and told him what to do, instead of trying to cut the cost, he increased revenue. Yippee-yi-yo!
Like a rope, hang 'em high.